This is Security Squad, a CertSecurity.com podcast, episode 1, recorded January 11th, 2011. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. Joining me in the studio is Eric Perrizzo. Eric is senior site editor of CertSecurity.com and the Security Media Group.
Hi, Rob. Great to be here.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Hi, Rob.
Mike Momoso is editorial director of the Security Media Group. In this edition, we'll talk about the value or lack of value of security predictions. Almost every vendor had them. Then we turn our focus to mobile malware. A Google Android Trojan surfaced in China recently, and many people predict mobile Armageddon in 2011. And finally, browser vulnerabilities. There's a lot of them out there. And not surprisingly, a researcher uncovered nearly 100 of them with his new fuzzing tool. Many were 0 days, but will anything change as more people turn to smartphones and tablet devices? So let's start off with security predictions. And I want to go around the room, starting with Eric. Do you value security predictions? And do you think enterprises get any value out of these security predictions that seem to come towards the end of December of every year?
Well, security predictions are free, and as is usually the case with free things, you get what you pay for. So generally speaking, are they helpful? To us, yes, somewhat. You know, they usually come at the end of the year. The end of the year is a little slow, so it's interesting to see what sort of random predictions get tossed out there. But to the average security pro, do they matter? No, not really. I think people are just making these things up for the most part, throwing things against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I have the same opinion. Mike, what's your take?
Yeah, I predict 2011 will not be the year of PKI. How's that for going out on a limb? No, they're marketing tools by vendors. I mean, depends who's making them. If you've got somebody who's in the trenches who, you know, sees a trend or something, it might be worth noting. But at the end of the day, our audience is sitting in front of a screen looking at logs, and they're very focused on what applies to their enterprise and what applies to their day-to-day duties. And, you know, some down-in-the-weeds a virtual rootkit, you know, doesn't matter today. Maybe 5 years from now it will, but no, I don't think too many people put too much stock in these predictions.
Well, the issue with security, with trends in the security industry, it seems as if they take time to kind of evolve. I mean, the trends don't just happen overnight. So when you come to the end of a year and you look back, you can look at the top news stories that took place, but I don't know if you're suddenly going to get these brand new trends that appear over just the course of 1 year.
Yeah, it's a little bit of posturing. You know, you say today that, you know, mobile malware, you're going to have a mobile apocalypse, and when it happens 2 years from now, oh, I was ahead of the curve 2 years ago. You know, look at me, I'm so great.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the value for some vendor or their marketing department.
Eric, do you think a trend just appears in just suddenly? How do you describe a trend?
A trend. Well, I don't know if you would necessarily call it a trend, but the first thing that comes to mind for me is the interest we had suddenly increasing around this time last year in the concept of APT, or the Advanced Persistent Threat. It seemed like there was a lot of talk about it based on what happened with the Google Aurora situation.
Yeah.
And as a result, I think a lot of researchers saw similar attacks that happened before and afterward and said, boy, this APT thing is really a serious problem now. But in reality, most of those kinds of attacks have been taking place for a while, and it was largely just kind of the hot label that was sort of put on those types of attacks that were, often from foreign sources and persisted in nature and lasting weeks and months, as opposed to being quick hit attacks. So I guess I would say that most trends tend to be around for a while until, and then a little while afterward, you kind of realize them. You know what I mean?
Some sort of major event, like the Google attacks.
Exactly. So I feel like the race to identify trends, obviously, is kind of self-defeating in that the most significant trends aren't going to, you know, come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about security predictions and the value of them, I thought we would go back, and I actually wrote a story on Symantec's security trends to watch in 2010. So they issued these just at the end of 2009. So I thought we'd go down the list and talk briefly about each one of these and see if these trends actually came true or if they're coming true.
And to be clear, this is after a year of, you know, figuring out what's happened. So we can kind of have a little distance to gauge exactly
hindsight
what happened, right?
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Yeah, this might be a little unfair, but
no, I don't think we're gonna badmouth Symantec or anything. This is just, you know. You ready? Antivirus is not enough. With the rise of polymorphic threats and the explosion of unique malware variants in 2009, the industry is quickly realizing that traditional approaches to antivirus, both file signatures and heuristic behavioral capabilities, are not enough to protect against today's threats.
I thought you said this was 2009's list, not 2004's.
Well, wait a second. They threw in the heuristic behavioral capabilities. So
I thought you said this was 2009's list.
Yeah, again, that's kind of obvious. Probably could put that any of the past 5 years and any of the next 5 years.
Yeah. But it is a good point, though. I mean,
it's their push.
Signatures are useless and everybody
right.
knows it.
I think it's their – they say approaches to security that look to ways to include all software files, such as reputation-based security, will become key in 2010.
Important point to put out there, I would say, because there may be some non-security focused decision makers out there who feel like, you know, antivirus is enough. But mm-hmm. clearly that's not the case.
Social engineering is the primary attack vector. I think people started to see this in 2009, that attackers were targeting Facebook and Twitter and some others. But this says more and more attackers are going directly after the end user and attempting to trick them into downloading malware or divulging sensitive information under the auspice that they are doing something perfectly innocent. Social engineering and the social network.
Yeah, that's the precursor in any targeted attack, too. I mean, kind of relates to a lot of the Aurora stuff and other targeted attacks we read about last year.
Mm-hmm. And they're in their final statement here, it says social engineering techniques are sure to increase in 2010. And yep. I think we've written a lot more about them.
Yeah, I would say increase. I wouldn't say the landscape has necessarily shifted. I still think the types of attacks we're seeing by and large are, you know, are platform focused or, you know, against specific software mm-hmm. flaws as opposed to, you know, trying to exploit social engineering methods via social networking. But clearly it's an increasingly troubling issue.
The next one, rogue security software vendors escalate their efforts. In 2010, they expect to see the propagators of rogue security software scams take their efforts to the next level, even by hijacking users' computers, rendering them useless, and holding them for ransom.
I think it's more of a consumer issue, don't you? I mean, they're preying on the really uninitiated kind of home user to just fall for this. Oh my God, I'm not going to be able to get on my Facebook unless I install this application. And, you know, they keep clicking yes and install and yes and install, and pretty soon they're owned and, you know, they're part of a bot and it's all downhill from there.
Yeah. And I know they actually, they did find some rogue antivirus software that used a technique to basically encrypt all of the files on the machine, and you had to actually pay to get those
some ransom, yeah,
decrypted. So, to a certain extent, this
more I would
was
say
correct.
That's more of an exception than the rule, though. Clearly, the rogue anti-malware situation is bad, and I think it's been bad for a
using
while.
SEO poisoning, right? That's one of the
that's
primary
ways,
methods
yeah.
that they're gaining access.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is also social networking centric, I guess. Social networking third-party applications will be the target of fraud. With the popularity of social networking sites poised for another year of unprecedented growth, we'll expect to see fraud being leveraged against site users to grow. And they talk about how Facebook and some other social networks allow developers, third-party developers, to access their APIs, develop applications, and that some of these applications may be malicious.
Seems like a niche issue to me. I don't think most enterprises need to worry about that, and I wouldn't say that's a significant threat that we saw increase in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of this discussion, did we see a lot of it? I mean, I don't...
We haven't heard too much about it. I mean, there have been some cases of third-party applications they find taking personal data,
mm-hmm.
Especially with Facebook.
There was a lot of privacy issues with certain applications.
What's interesting there, though, is I think in those situations, Facebook almost seems to get more of the blame for allowing that kind of connectivity versus the third-party applications themselves. And that's an interesting topic of discussion. How much responsibility should Facebook take for ensuring, you know, secure sharing of that information versus the end users themselves?
It's going to be an increasing issue, too, with mobile. I mean, you know, you got the Apple App Store, and Android has app stores now. And I mean, that's going to be a huge issue, too, if developers have access to those APIs and start developing for those platforms, too. You're gonna get the scumbags riding along that wave, too.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to see that with Android.
Yeah.
A little bit. The next one, Windows 7 will come into the crosshairs of attackers. Microsoft has already released the first security. This was in obviously 2009 into 2010. Released the first security patches for the new operating system, Windows 7. Microsoft's new operating system is no exception. And in Windows 7, as Windows 7 hits the pavement and gains traction in 2010, attackers will undoubtedly find ways to exploit its users.
Yeah, I mean, the jury's still out on Windows 7. Microsoft had more patches in 2010 than any other year prior, and a pretty significant number of them were for Windows 7 issues, pretty serious ones. So I think it remains to be seen whether Windows 7 proves to ultimately be more secure than its predecessors, and that's a major issue.
I wonder how major it really is, though. It seems like attacks... it's no longer the operating system. We've talked about this. It's no longer the operating system anymore. It is the browser that is the ultimate attack vector.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't make a blanket statement like that, though.
We haven't heard of too many cases of specific operating system exploits used, right?
Yeah, they're web-based now.
The browser is king.
Listen, I'm clearly the browser is a top target, but to say that we're not going to
attack vector. I'm not saying target. I'm saying attack vector. I'm all the browser and its components is the way in.
Yeah. How about the bigger question though of you know, trustworthy computing? We're going almost on 10 years of this, and we're still. What was December? Was the monster patch update? I mean, we're still having months like this, almost 10 years later. And you know, and I'm just as guilty as the next guy to heap a lot of praise on Microsoft for improving their processes around patching and the development lifecycle. But it's still a mess.
I don't know. I feel like we should argue the other side of the coin, too. Shouldn't we worry more in the months when there aren't a lot of patches? Aren't those the months when perhaps there are flaws that are exploited and unrecognized?
Sure. That's absolutely valid and, again, still lends to the bigger issue. Why is this stuff still going to market a mess? Mm-hmm. And why are they let off the hook, kind of? I mean, they're certainly not. The pressure certainly isn't on Microsoft the way it used to be,
and maybe
it should be ramped up. I don't think so.
Well,
how many pats on the back do they get for doing sessions at cons about, you know, the SDLC and how great it is and how you can take bits and pieces of it and apply it to your organization? Yeah, it's true and it's valid, but again, you know, you're still getting 55 bulletins every other month to worry about.
I guess the question is it inevitable? I mean, if you're going to be building software, you're going to have software vulnerabilities, and Microsoft is still obviously the
main focus of most
security researchers.
Right. It's not an easy answer. But again, Windows 7 was championed as this, you know, much improved security story over certainly Vista. But again, you know, like Eric said, there's a ton of problems with it still. And we're hearing about it monthly.
What we have to ask ourselves is maybe this is as good as it gets when you're talking about commercial software that's as popular, widely used as Microsoft's is, and has hundreds of thousands of lines of code, is the best system there is. You do the best you can in development as, you know, as time and money allows. You put it out there, and then you patch the issues as quickly as possible. Microsoft has a good system in place for doing that. Clearly, a lot of other vendors have copied it. We always wonder, is it going to get better? I think maybe we have our answer. I don't think it is. I think this is probably the plateau.
Yeah. Let's move on. URL shortening services become a Fisher's best friend. And I think this was already going on in 2009 when they predicted that 2010 this would continue, I suppose. Because users, they say, because users often have no idea where a shortened URL is actually sending them, Fishers are able to disguise links that are average security, that the average security conscious user might think twice about clicking on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think for many users, if you feel like Facebook is a trusted, you know, for example, is a trusted source of information, if there's a shortened link on Facebook, you click on it and it turns out to be malicious, then, you know, you better have a second level of defense there to help you out, be it anti-malware or web filtering, what have you. Otherwise, you're going to be owned. So
yeah, it's a huge issue on Twitter because of the character limitations there. And, you know, the security community is pretty active on Twitter, and there's a ton of those bit.ly links and other tiny URL links floating around around Twitter. And, you know, there's a lot of trust that goes into clicking on one of those because you don't know where the majority of them go. And there are services that'll kind of help you out, but for the most part, you know, it's you're on your own.
Mac and mobile malware will increase is the next one. We're actually hearing that now, headed into 2011. Then we'll see more of this. They say the number. This is in 2009, headed into 2010. They say the number of attacks designed to exploit a certain operating system or platform is directly related to that platform's market share. And obviously, since Mac users and iPhone users were increasing at the time and continue to increase, they will be targeted more by malware authors.
Yeah. I'm not necessarily buying it, but we're recording this on the day of the expected Verizon iPhone announcement. So it'd be interesting to see there. The market share is going to go up really quickly for iPhone. We'll see if there is an effect there.
We'll talk about this later in the show, too, since there was that Google Android mobile malware that was discovered. The next one is spammers breaking the rules. As the economy continues to suffer and more people seek to take advantage of the loose restrictions of the Canned Spam Act, we'll see more organizations selling authorized email address lists and more less than legitimate marketers spamming those lists. I don't think there's been a major change in spam.
Yeah, if anything, I feel like spam has gone down. I remember in Q4, there was a story about how one of the major ISPs somewhere in Europe or Asia, I don't remember, was taken down. And all of a sudden, there was, you know, a 20 or 30% drop in global spam almost overnight. So I think that sort of proved that there's probably a pretty small number of ISPs out there that are propagating spam. So I think if we can continue to keep those sources under control and put continue efforts to take those malicious sources down, then I think it will continue to keep spam under control. I think that's what we're starting to see. So I don't know. I think that's probably the first prediction I would maybe put an X over.
Yeah, I mean, you always hear about a bot going down, being taken down legitimately, legally.
There's a blip.
There's a blip, and it goes down, and then it shoots back up. I mean,
specialized malware. Highly specialized malware was uncovered in 2009. That was aimed at exploiting certain ATMs, indicating a degree of insider knowledge about their operation and how they could be exploited. Expect this trend to continue in 2010, including the possibility of malware targeting electronic voting systems, both those used in political elections and public telephone voting, such as that connected with reality television shows and competitions. They didn't go so far to talk about the possibility of cyber terrorism related specialized malware, but we did get that with Stuxnet in 2010. That was spot on.
Mm. Not to mention the research demonstrations of exploits against ATMs that enables them to spit money out on stage.
That's right.
Black Hat, yeah.
That's right.
So you tell me American Idol's rigged?
All right, on to mobile malware. Users of Android smartphones in China found that they could be infected by this mobile malware called Genimi, G-E-I-N-I-M-I.
Now, the malware was detected coming from applications that were downloaded from third-party services. So these are people that changed the settings on their Android phone to enable it to go to third-party application providers, to download games and other apps.
Is that essentially jailbreaking the application capability on the phone?
I don't think they had to jailbreak it. I think that by default, the phone is not enabled to use the third-party sites, but there is a setting on there that you can enable it to go to those sites. So this brings up the issue of mobile malware. Are we going to see a lot of mobile malware out there in 2011?
I'll take a first shot at that. Apocalypse, I think that's a little overstated, but I think there will be an increase in 2011. I think we're hearing rumblings right now as well that perhaps the first significant iPhone Trojan is starting to circulate out there as well. So I think because it's simply...
Again, among jailbroken iPhones?
It's largely a greenfield space for attackers. It hasn't been touched largely yet, so I think there's going to be some increased effort there. But to your point, Rob, it's a great one because there are so many different platforms, from Android to Windows Mobile to iPhone to BlackBerry. No one attack method, as far as we know today, can work on all those different platforms, and that increases the cost to attackers because their potential reach is inherently limited with any one given attack, unlike, say, you know, Internet Explorer or Windows ecosystem, what have you. So will there be an increase? I think so, just because, as we've talked about, more and more people around the world are using a mobile as their primary computing device on a day-to-day basis. So that's where the data is going to reside increasingly. But it'll take some time, I think, if ever we see it the same volume of attacks we see on PC clients.
Mm-hmm. I think the interesting piece with this news is that it was embedded in these applications. This wasn't something where it took a text message and a lot of user interaction. It was embedded in there. There was ultimately some user interaction, though. I think
you have to approve the downloads.
That's, I think, going to be the biggest area of concern going forward for at least the next several years, is going to be the security of these app downloads. The concept of downloading an app in the last, I would say, 1 to 2 years has gone from almost nobody knowing what it is to suddenly it's everybody's doing it. So it seems like it's just a wide open opportunity for attackers to create applications that seemingly look interesting, but in reality have, you know, malware directly built into them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be incumbent on application providers to do a better job of vetting these applications. And as it stands today, it seems like they barely, if ever, vet for security. It's just a matter of do the applications work? Does it do what the developer says it does? Okay, let's throw it out there.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the next area you're going to see a huge crackdown from the industry, is on these third-party application providers and you know, the Facebook app process and the Apple App Store and Android App Store. They're going to have to be a little bit more transparent about how they vet these apps and what they're doing about the security of them and the process for submitting them, because it probably won't happen until you get a significant attack that's, you know, fairly widespread that causes some kind of service disruption or something. But because that's just the way the security industry is, or the industry is anyway. It's just reactive. But until you get a significant attack, it may not happen. But I think that, you know, down the line, that's where you're going to see some kind of movement around, you know, this kind of application security.
Okay, so the last issue is this new CrossFuzz, this fuzzer that was designed by Polish security researcher Michael Zalewski, and he's a member of Google's vulnerability research team. He was able to find 100 vulnerabilities in many different browsers, from Internet Explorer, Firefox, and Opera. And he said he released his tools so that other security experts can improve its effectiveness
and get software makers to correct the errors.
Well, to me, it's connected to the NSS Labs research that Google came out and refuted, that, you know, suddenly not long afterwards, a Google researcher comes out with a tool that finds 100 vulnerabilities in other browsers and not including Chrome.
So yeah, have you been
following? Third time in 6 months that one of their researchers is disclosed.
Right.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. The first one was who, you know, said he was doing it on his own blog. Or
connecting the dots quickly, Google and Microsoft are trying to each maintain control, gain control or maintain control of the browser space. A big part of that is they're trying to attack each other's credibility when it comes to security.
In your opinion?
I, as an industry observer, that's what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. And this is the case, you think, with this guy here, Michael Zalewski, this security researcher from Google, who inadvertently released this zero-day vulnerability and the research about the Internet Explorer vulnerabilities.
Right. As Mike said, it's not the first time we've seen a quote-unquote Google researcher release this kind of data about other browsers, especially Internet Explorer. And at the same time, Microsoft is clearly trying to advance research positions that favor its security as well. I mean, dumbing it down to a really basic level, Microsoft is trying to take advantage of its experience and its ability to spot malware, while Google is trying to take advantage of the position the security built within its browser. But Microsoft obviously has weaknesses when it comes to 0 days that attack the browser itself, whereas Google, you could argue, isn't as sophisticated as Microsoft when it comes to finding malware. So there are pros and cons, I think, on either side.
I would think that that's a very serious accusation if you think that the fact that some of this is coming out because to maintain control over a particular browser market share at the it actually weakens the customer, right? The user of these browsers.
Listen, there is big business when it comes to browser control these days, because by default, what search engine does Internet Explorer use? It's not Google, it's Bing. So if you have control of the browser, you have control of the search engine, and ultimately you have control of potentially the ads that display in that browser.
I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, you know, these guys are, I mean, the first researcher that I remembered, his name was Tavis Ormandy. And he kind of claimed that, you know, he was, yes, I work for Google, but this research was done on my own and I released it on my own. And, you know, he tried to separate himself from the whole argument. But, it you know, end of the day, it's a Google guy releasing a Microsoft zero day. And Eric makes a great point about the control over the browser and the search engine that's linked to it. You know, Microsoft has market share and Google is trying to chip away at it. Firefox has been trying to do it for years and still has a marginal piece of the market. So, you know, Microsoft's still the top dog and still the biggest target out there. And, you know, it's a game. It's a cat and mouse game between these guys and between hackers and them. And it's not going away.
Security is just one battleground.
Yeah.
Increasingly escalating war, but it's a very important battleground. And we're going to see more research of this nature, no doubt, to come in 2011.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Squad. Be sure to check out our previous podcast by going to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page by going to searchsecurity.com/news. For Mike Momoso, Eric Parizeau, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.